antenna, making it look like a 1.1:1 to the transmitter, and the whole system works like a charm. So you got to be careful how you interpret standing wave ratio, as Mel was saying. Get emails from people who think a 1.2 is unacceptable, and they got and asking us what they should be doing. And they're gilding the lily in most cases. K2KEY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Exactly. This is K2KEY. I had a number of emails discussing SWR and what they should do about it. They think I should. One, a couple of them, in fact, more than one, asked me if they think they transmitted because a number of their friends, Maven, told them that transmitter output transistors, when they overheat, life of the radio. Well, actually, modern radios, there is a FAC type of built into the radio as part of the ALC circuit, which does fold back the power as the SWR. And it's not going to be directly responsible if your SWR goes up. I fixed that a little bit higher, that that's going to be direct responsibility for failure of the radio. And the radios are all work in two SWRs that are below 2:1. And so it's like 1.5:1, terrific, no problem whatsoever, even 1.6, 7, even that, up to 2:1, I don't think you should even second thought. So please don't email me and tell me that the meter, the SWR meter, whether or not you should continue radio so you can rectify the problem at the antenna. It's not going to be of any premature damage to the radio.
Certainly agree with that. So antennas in general, standing wave ratio in particular, are sometimes an extremely unpredictable mixture of things that are critical and things that are not critical. When it comes to building a Yagi antenna, probably on 432, like to tune each of your directors to the nearest 16th of an inch. When it comes to putting the elements on the boom itself, the placement probably to the nearest half inch is good enough, as long as it's not an accumulative error. When it comes to the elements all being parallel to each other, you can make the elements non-parallel, some of them twisted to the right, and some of them are twisted to the left as you look down the boom. You can tilt those elements left and right. Your eye will easily see 2 degrees of tilt, and you can tilt those elements 10 times beyond that, 20 degrees left and right, and very little happens. So antennas are a weird mixture of things that are critical and things that are not critical. Standing wave ratio is like that. If I'm using a state-of-the-art, low-noise, temp, low-noise transistorized amplifier for my moonbound setup at 432, in order to get top performance out of that preamplifier, I'd like the antenna to have a standing wave ratio of 1.05 or better. But when I'm transmitting through that antenna and I'm worrying about the efficiency of transmission, a 2:1 standing wave ratio is good enough. So again, it's a weird mixture of things that are critical, things that are not critical. Depends on what you're doing. And so there are times when people worry unnecessarily, as Mel was telling you. There are other times when they should worry. With a little bit more smart, you'll find out when you should worry. K2KEY, K2RIW, detect that.
Exactly, this is K2KEY. Again, this is a demonstration of the Unite. I really overemphasize the situation, you know, when by UNSWR of 2.5. That's so it can make a nice, you know, sizable circle, and also actually, you know, show, you know, when you're drawing what it looks like. So many times you'll find that we're dealing a lot closer, much smaller circles, and many different lines on the St. Smith chart. And a couple of people said, you know, it gets to be a little confusing. A little trick I've learned with the Smith chart, I have a number of different colored pencils. And what I do, if I am going to draw a number of different circles and all, and determine them, which one and or line, I will change colors, slip into my compass a different color pencil, or line, like, for instance, the line we just bisected the circle with. You can make that in red and make the circle in black. And then when you write your note, you can underline the where you made, for instance, the line of 0.1 wavelength, where you marked that off on the chart. You can underline that in your, when you notes, you can underline it with red, so it'll remind you that was the red line. And making a note on about the 2.5 circle, and made that in black, you can underline it with black pencil. So this way, you know, you'll be reminded of which particular permanent final reading, you know, and the procedure will be easy. Remember, if you have, you know, several colors on the same chart. Of course, usually, like I say, I'm just emphasizing this. This is only a couple of simple measurements, but when you get a lot of details, I've got some charts I made that are literally have many, many details on where to keep track of it. Like I say, many times it's with different colors. Do you have any other tricks that you'd like to do with the front stick? Over.
Whenever I make a diagram, an electronic diagram or a physical diagram of how I want somebody in the machine shop to build something, and I'm just giving them a sketch, I make sure I've got a blue pencil, a red pencil, a regular pencil, and a pen in my pocket. And I draw various portions of that diagram in those various colors. And with the words down below in those colors, I indicate, hey, this is the plastic that goes in between those sheets of metal, and so on. So as long as the person looking at your chart is not colorblind, color can make an awful lot of things that would ordinarily be overlapping and everything on top of each other and confusing all hell. Color at times can make things a lot easier to understand. So I use colors in my diagrams a whole lot. I'm one of those silly guys that looks like an engineer that walks around with a pocket protector. I don't have the pocket protector wrapped over my pocket so that everything sticks on the outside. I leave the whole thing on the inside of my pocket. But that pocket protector, I've always got a number of pencils and a number of pens and various colors. Now you know why. Back to you, Mel, KQLIW on the TechNet.
Yeah, Roger. I do ruin many a shirt. yes, I use also the pencil that, you know, emphasizes a particular line. You know, they can write right over with that sort of a yellow pencil highlighting a particular line. So with these little tricks and all, basically you can get to the point where it makes the Smith art a little bit more easy to, you know, stand after a period of time. If you, examples, eventually you want to substitute in their measurements. I used to like the stamp. One time they used to have stamps. I had a stamp for that of the, take the Smith chart and stamp it on a page with this. Next to it put information, you know, detailed information. But can't get the stamp anymore. So, well, the sheets now, these nice 8x11 sheet boxes, Black Magic signs, it's pretty good. It gives you a lot of room around the edges. Make diagrams you can find. You can make, like just now, I gave the setup for using the slotted line, and also helpful if you just diagram of using the RF generator and the putting the bird watt meter and then the slotted line and the antenna on the end of it. And right next to it, that you are looking fine. What feature is for finding the load tenant. And mark it underneath there. It requires two measurements to determine it. So with things like that, I'm sure that future you can always gather and trying to give you every procedure that I can think of simply of simple applications of the Smith chart. Okay, I guess that's it. The K2RIW and the great 2KEY.
Okay, so that was lesson number 5, I think it was, tonight. Both on Smith chart, slotted line, and some quick calculations for radio real loss, free space loss, and some of what enthralls people like Mel, Barry, and I. The fact that there were times when such an extremely little, in my case, 0.2 watt on 10 gigs going into a 2-foot on top of my tower, can walk 380 miles on 10,000 megacycles and have a thoroughly transistorized transmitter receiver. They could all be running on flashlight batteries. Runs on 12 volts at around 1 ampere, as I remember. Maybe even a little bit less than an ampere. And I'm dreaming about the day when I'm going to be using the equipment on 76 gigahertz, 120 gigahertz, and 200 is 80 meters without a doubt. Guys using 80 meters, 160 meters every day to talk to their favorite people around the world. Each frequency has got its own kind that Mel's talking about. It's very easy to use on VHF frequencies, 50 megs and above. Very rarely does anybody use a slotted line on 80 meters. Could, but a slotted line itself, because you have to find a peak and a valley, a minimum of a quarter wave, and you'd like to have a half wave of length of the slotted line. Well, a slotted line on 80 meters would be 130 feet long. There's other ways you can do that. In the case of 80 meters, you can put T-connectors along your transmission line and make measurements at various locations. That's the equivalent of moving the carriage that Mel talked about. Or if you're really careful and you're willing to seal up the holes afterwards, drill a small hole with a straight pin. You could put a small hole through the side of your coax cable, as long as it's a piece you don't care about, and make your own probe at various places along the transmission line. If you use an open wire line, it's very easy to make off the equivalent of a electro wire setup. Neon bulbs or number 47 light bulbs on some kind of a structure that you slide along the twin lead, along the open line. That's a very practical thing to do on 80 meters. There's easier ways of doing it. Mel's AEA antenna measurement device, we measure the forward power, the reverse power, or the standing wave ratio just by pressing the right buttons and twisting the knobs is a way to go. Happy about the fact that you guys have got some very moderate instrumentation. I mean, a good network analyzer these days or an antenna tuner measures phase and amplitude with high precision. Our frequency counters measure frequency with high precision. We used to have to use a slotted line or a electro wire system to measure wavelength. And now you know why it's called the 80-meter band, because in those days, there really was 40 meters between the peak and the valley. Correction, 40 meters between the successive peaks, there would be 20 meters between the peak and the valley, but 40 meters between successive valleys on a slotted line or on your open wire transmission system. To measure frequency by measuring the distance between the nulls on the open wire transmission line. That figured out, that told you the wavelength, and so in the old days, people didn't even bother converting it into megacycles. Your spark gap transmitter, you knew you're roughly on the 80-meter band because you saw 40 meters of difference between successive nulls on your open wire transmission line. So, you guys have got some real great advantages with modern instrumentation, and you haven't seen nothing yet. Wait till these guys really get rolling with digital signal processing on the currently available instrumentation. You're going to see some very fancy measurements made in the future. But if you got any further questions for Mark, for Mel, or Dick, give us your call letters and name right now. KQLIW and the TechNet. Okay, I think we've gone far enough tonight, Mel. This was TechNet number 1,115. TechNet number 1,115 of the series that began in September of 1982. Here we are, 24 years, or was it 1984? I think it was 1982. 24 and a fraction years downrange. There are still questions to be answered and questions to be asked, as you can tell. I think Mel and I will be back next week, so 73 you all, be kind to each other, and Mel, pass it over to you for your closing comments, and are you sure you want to volunteer to answer all the email that you get, or maybe you want to be a little bit more conservative to say that you'll try to answer all the email you get, but you can't guarantee it. Beyond a certain volume, they may be choking the horse. K2KEY, KQRIW, the TechNet.
Oh, that's true. This is K2KEY. As I said, I'm going to end the announcement again that if you are questioning me about an individual, cannot answer it, nor can I answer a question about any product. another one's commercial product, especially when it comes to antennas. I suggest you buy in a way of your handbrake again. They're all subjected to a number of factors. You know, what's your pocketbook like? What locations and emails? Because, again, I said, I don't want to keep saying to you, no comments. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. It is a comment situation. The tech that's here can answer those questions. As far as answering your question about something about minor problem you have or something, I try to answer whatever I can think of off, you know, top of my head, maybe the answer to the problem, you know, of a minor electronic problem or something like that. Here's the experience I've had, you know, with test instruments and things I don't mind answering. But I can't answer anything in really when it comes to commercial. Again, commercial equipment, commercial antennas. I don't know one product from the other, just like we talked about handy talkies tonight. I can't critique one handy talkie or give you the best, you know, bang for your buck. You know, there's many of them on the market. You gotta read over really specifications that's usually published in Q&A, make your own choice. I mean, I got a number of those questions also. But emails coming, I'll try to do my best. Thank you very much for joining us. 73 from Stealth, and we'll look forward next week. This is K2KEY.
Bye-bye, you all.